नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय श्रीमद् भागवतम् Canto 8, Chapter 9, Text 16 to 18. Translation and commentary by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. We'll recite together verse 18. Well, I'll just go through 16 and 17 first. Prana mukheshu pavishteshu Sureshu diti jeshu cha dupamodita shalayang jushtayang malya dipikaihi tasyam narendra karabharur shadukula shroni tartalasa gatir madavih vahlakshi sa Kujati kanaka nupara shinjitena kumbastani kalasa panir atavivesha. So referring to bodily parts, kara means Sanskrit students, young boys. Kara means? Then, bhurur. What does that mean? I'm looking it up. That we have the name Rambu. Oh, it's one word, karaba uruhu, uru. Thighs, it's translated here as thighs. Then, ushadukula refers to her. Dukula refers to? Any idea? It's a fairly common word. Dukula means cloth. Shuni. Anyone? Waist. How is it translated here? It's translated as hips. Tata alasa gatia. Shuni tatala. Okay, so translation. O king, as the demigods and demons sat facing east in an arena. Oh, then we have Kumbastani Kalasa Paneer. That's a common metaphor. Kumbastani Kalasa Pani. Her breasts were like pots filled with water. O king, as the demigods and demons sat facing east in an arena fully decorated with flower garlands and lamps and fragrant with the smoke of incense, that woman, dressed in a most beautiful sari, her ankle bells tinkling, entered the arena walking very slowly because of her big low hips. Her eyes were restless due to youthful pride. Her breasts were like water jugs. Her thighs resembled the trunks of elephants. Oh, and she carried a pot of water in her hand. So, kumbha. Kumbastani means, she's actually carrying a pot of water, a water pot in her hand, but there's not just water in there. Something worth fighting for. Demigods and demons will, after all this, they'll do what they usually do and fight. Okay, text 18. Tang Shri Sakim Kanaka Kundala Charu Karna. Nasa kapola vadanang paradevata kyam.
Nasa kapola vadanang paradevata
Sangviksha sammohar, Sangviksha sammohar, Utsmita viksharnena. Devasura vigalita stana partikantam.
Devasura vigalita stana partikantam.
Tang Shri Sakim Kanaka Kundala Charu Karna.
Tang Shri Sakim Kanaka Kundala Charu Karna.
Nasa Kapola Vadanang Paradevata Kyam. Sangviksha sammohar utsmita vikshanena.
Sangviksha sammohar utsmita vikshanena.
Devasura vigalita stanna patikantam patika.
Devasura vigalita stanna patikantam.
Tam unto her. Shri Sakim, appearing like a personal associate of the goddess of fortune.
Appearing like a personal associate of the goddess of fortune.
Kanaka
Kundala.
Sanskrit students, what does Kanaka Kundala mean? Golden earrings, with golden earrings, here it's given. Charu means? Smiling, no. Sweet, not exactly. Attractive, almost. Beautiful. Karna. If you don't get this right, we'll beat your ears. What does it mean?
Ears,
okay. We won't beat your ears. We might beat your nose. Nasa means nose, okay. Kapola.
Kapola.
Cheeks, you got it right. Cheeks. Vadanam. If you don't know this, you should hide your face. It's a very obvious one. Vadanam. Face, face. This one isn't going to be so easy. Para devata akyam. Para means. Supreme, other, above, like this. Devata. So, para devata akyam is the Supreme Lord, the Personality of Godhead, appearing in that form. Okay, sambiksha. Anyone? Can something to do with seeing, yeah. Looking at her. Sammu muhuhu. All of them became enchanted. Utsmita. Hear the word smita. Means? So you're not very sure of this. Utsmita. Slightly smiling. Then vikshanena. Yeah, again, seeing. First, there was some viksha, now there is vikshanena, glancing over them. Deva asuraha, that's obvious, all the demigods and demons. Vigalita stana patika antam. Vigalita. Anyone have any idea of that? It means moving slightly, just like melted can have that meaning. Stana, do you know what that means? Breast, or breasts in this case. Patika. Anyone? Ah, you're looking at it, but it's not. It's not the border. The antam is the border. That's the next word. Patika gives the sense of sari. Silk. The border of, so vigalita stana patika antam, the border of the sari on the breasts moves slightly. Her attract, this is the verse translation, her attractive nose and cheeks and her ears adorned with golden earrings made her face very beautiful. As she moved, her sari's border on her breasts moved slightly aside. When the demigods and demons saw these beautiful features of Mohini Murti, who was glancing at them and slightly smiling, they were all completely enchanted. Purport. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur remarks here that Mohini Murti is the Supreme Personality of Godhead in a feminine form, and that the goddess of fortune is her associate. This form assumed by the personality of Godhead challenged the goddess of fortune. The goddess of fortune is beautiful, but if the Lord accepts the form of a woman, he surpasses the goddess of fortune in beauty. It is not that the goddess of fortune being female is the most beautiful. The Lord is so beautiful that he can excel any beautiful goddess of fortune by assuming a female form. Om Jnana Timirandhasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chakshurin Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Nama Shreshtam Manamapi Shachiputram Atra Swarupam Rupam Tasyagrajam Urupurim Maturim Goshnapatim Radha Kundam Girivaramaho Radhika Madhava Sham Prapto Yasya Pratita Kripaya Shri Gurum Tam Natosmi Vandeham Shri Guru Shri Atav Padakamalam Shri Gurun Vaishnavans Chashi Rupam Sagraja Tam Sahagana Raghunatan Vitam Tam Sajivam Sadvaitam Savadhutam Parijana Sahitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Sri Radha Krishna Padan Sahagana Lalita Sri Vishakhan Vitanscha. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur often makes controversial statements. This one's really controversial, that the Supreme Lord is more beautiful than the goddess of fortune. You could have some real fights over that one. But I'm not going to get into that subject just now because that is subjective. You can't speak very philosophically about that. It's a matter of taste and attachment at the highest level of Krishna consciousness, which I am aspiring to, but I'm not there, so I won't attempt to jump in where I'm not fit. I'm going to read now from the fifth canto of Bhagavatam, chapter 2, text 6, referring to Agnidra, seeing Puravachiti and Apsara, how he saw her. The description is as follows. Like a honeybee, the Apsara, that's Puravachiti, smelled the beautiful and attractive flowers. She could attract the minds and vision of both humans and demigods by her playful movements, her shyness and humility, her glances, the very pleasing sounds that poured from her mouth as she spoke, and the motion of her limbs. By all these qualities, she opened for Cupid, who bears an arrow of flowers, a path of oral reception into the minds of men. When she spoke, nectar seemed to flow from her mouth. As she breathed, the bees, mad for the taste of her breath, tried to hover about her beautiful lotus-like eyes. Disturbed by the bees, she tried to move hastily, but as she raised her feet to walk quickly, her hair, The belt on her hips and her breasts, which were like water jugs, also moved in a way that made her extremely beautiful and attractive. Indeed, she seemed to be making a path for the entrance of Cupid, who is most powerful. I remember many years at Godbrother telling me that reading descriptions like this in the Bhagavatam actually disturbed his mind with lusty desires. The Bhagavatam is meant to be read by those who are sadhava, the shrinvanti gayanti grinanti sadhavaha, those purified men who are thoroughly honest. Nirmatsaranam satam, the paramahamsas who are free from all envy. So even reading the Bhagavatam, one could be agitated by reading such descriptions. It's possible. The description of Mohini Murti and the description of Purvachiti, it's very similar. And the aim is the same of both Agnidra, of both Mohini Murti and of Purvachiti. The aim is to agitate in a mundane way the minds of persons, males, who they want to manipulate using their female charms. So you have to be careful reading these things, not to read it with a mundane consciousness. In the Krishna book, 10th canto of Bhagavatam, there's a description how in Dwaraka, Krishna was playing water sports with his queens, and the Pandavas were there, and Draupadi and other queens were there, and they're in the water and squirting the jala yantra, the syringe, and the women's saris became wet, and then their bodily form became highlighted, and persons who were not pure, they became agitated by seeing this. So here we're talking about not only a material form, namely the form of Purvachiti, but even the spiritual forms of Krishna's queens and of the Supreme Personality of Godhead in the form of a female agitates the minds of those who are not pure. Can do. If we take it as an object of our enjoyment in a material lusty way, then we'll see it as material. That's how devotional service can become mundane, that we take Krishna as an object of our enjoyment, or we take the holy names as an object of our musical enjoyment, or we take prasadam as an object of our enjoyment. If we're not fully fixed in the attitude of service and submission, then we will take it as something mundane. Reading the purport to Canto 5, Chapter 2, Section 6, how a beautiful woman's movements and gestures, her hair and the structure of her breasts, hips, and other bodily features attract the minds not only of men, but of demigods, also is very finely described in this statement. Now, just skipping a few lines here. The Creator has constructed women in such a way that their beautiful voices and movements and the beautiful features of their hips, their breasts, and the other parts of their bodies attract the members of the opposite sex, both on earth and on other planets, and awaken their lusty desires. When one is controlled by Cupid or the beauty of women, he becomes stunned like matter such as stone. Captivated by the beautiful movements of women, he wants to remain in this material world. That's a big problem, isn't it? If you want to remain in the material world, that's a big problem. That's a bigger problem than coronavirus. Why isn't that in all over the news? Donald Trump announced, "I want to remain in the material world." That's very bad news for Donald Trump. And for anyone who thinks like that. But so to continue like this, to continue this purport. Thus one's promotion to the spiritual world, now this is for devotees because we're aiming to go to the spiritual world. Thus one's promotion to the spiritual world is checked simply by seeing the beautiful bodily structure and movements of women. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has therefore warned all devotees to beware of the attraction of beautiful women and materialistic civilization. And jumping down in the purport again, this warning, it's actually Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has said this in relation particularly to renunciants. Niskinchanasya bhagavat bhajanon mukhasya parang parang jigamesha bhavasagarasya sandarshanam vishinam atayoshitang cha ha hanta hanta visha pakshanatopya sadhu. For a person who is seriously designed to cross the material ocean and engage in the transcendental loving service of the Lord without material motives, seeing a materialist engaged in sense gratification, or seeing a woman who is similarly interested, is more abominable than drinking poison willingly. So Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has warned all devotees to beware of the attraction of beautiful women and materialistic civilization. Srila Prabhupada has, from the term sandarshanam vishyanam, seeing materialistic people are interested in sense gratification, he's extrapolated that to beware of materialistic civilization. Materialistic civilization is based on sex attraction. Griha sutapta, ato griha kshetra sutapta vitaya janasya mohoyam ahamameti. Everyone is bewildered. How does that verse begin? I'm especially looking at these boys here because they should learn all these things. Pungsastriya mituni bhavametam tayor ho. Hridya grantya mahu, tayor ato, hridya grantya. Ato griha kshetra, sutapta vitaya janasya moho yamahamameti. Now this describes how the attraction between male and female is the basis of material existence. And from that attraction, in the human form of life especially, this develops into a desire for a home. That is there in birds also. Many of them build nests, most of them. Ato griha kshetra, children, relatives, kshetra, my own place, and money. So these are all the components of materialistic civilization. That we have our kshetra. we need our space. This is our place. This is my place. This place belongs to me. This land is my land. This man's land is your land. But first of all, this is a song from America, old song. This land is my land. This land is your land. But first, it's my land. First, it's my land. And then it's, I'll also allow it's your land. And you may know that the excuse for the Germans to invade neighboring countries in the Second World War was that They needed more living space. We need more land. We're superior to you, and we need more land, so we're taking over your land. That was the excuse, that this land is my land, and your land is my land. And we're laughing now, but they were damn serious at the time, and it resulted in the death of so many people. So we can see that this Janasya Mohoya Mahammameti, this bewilderment which starts with the attraction from male and female, that expands into materialistic civilization. So Srila Prabhupada says here that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has warned all devotees to beware of the attraction of beautiful women and materialistic civilization, because the two are completely intertwined. The sexual attraction is not just one facet of materialistic civilization, but it's the underlying, it's the basis. Without that, there is no civilization. As Srila Prabhupada often quoted one thing he'd learned in economics class when he was in college, that the basis of economic development is family life. And he also cited in this regard that when he first got a job, Srila Prabhupada didn't do a job for very long. He quit his job and started his own business. But he did his first engagement after leaving college was that he was working in Dr. Bose's clinic. And he was the question he was asked before he got the job, are you married or not? Then they accepted him. Because as long as one is not married, he doesn't feel any responsibility. But when he's married, then he becomes very serious. Now I have to look after this whole situation and this wife and then the children. Otherwise he can just fool around for some time. Many years ago, at the time, a young man, disciple of mine, his parents came lamenting to me, oh, he's just so flippant and whimsical, and he takes one job, doesn't do it properly, takes another job. I said, just get him married, he'll be all right. And they kept on saying this, and just get him married, and then he's married and he was all right. That was the solution. So, if one is free from sexual desire, one is free from the birth and death, and all civilizational problems are solved. So the solution to all problems is to be free from sexual desire. There's one major thing that is not solved simply by getting free from sexual desire, and that is forgetting Krishna. So Mayavadis, they also attempt to be free from material desire, and they know very well the root of all this is sexual desire. And it's very difficult to overcome. The Varnashram system is meant for helping one to go beyond that, but it makes allowance for indulgence in it with the understanding that it's not something that's going to be overcome very soon. But those who are very serious about pursuing the ultimate goal of life, they, within the Varnashram system, they are supposed to, at the age of 50, start cutting out from family life as Varnaprastas and cease indulgence in physical sex, actually even sometime before that. So there's a whole system, but actually, to get free from birth and death, one has to be free from sexual desire. That's understood by all transcendentalists. It is the it is the chains, the shackles of sense gratification, beginning with sexual desire, binds us in this material world. The word karma has a general meaning of desire, and the specific meaning of sexual desire or lust. So this is the whole story of civilization, is building up big buildings and conquering other people by superior. It's not just, in most cases, it's not just, well, the sophisticated civilizations, they conquer others not just by brute force, but by superior tactics, using their intelligence, and increasingly so in the present age by superior technology, utilizing intelligence to conquer over others. The American forces in Afghanistan and Arabia, if it was a man-to-man fight, I'm pretty sure the Afghanis and the Arabs would smash the Americans to pulp, or worse. But superior technology keeps the Americans on top there. So that's considered a sign of civilization, to utilize one's intelligence to, in a more sophisticated way, eat, sleep, mate, and defend. Big buildings, luxury buildings, for living comfortably, for what? What do you need to live comfortably for? What's the point of living comfortably? When we're all going to die and we should be thinking about getting free from birth and death. But comfort and opulence that is desired by Hiranyakashipu. Hiranya means gold and Kashipu means bed. What do you need a bed for? And sleep on the floor. The word Kashipu also comes where in the Bhagavatam? In the second canto, where Shukadeva Goswami is saying, what do you need a bed for? You can just lie down on the floor. At the present time, the people of the world are very afraid of the coronavirus pandemic, and they're afraid that the whole civilization may collapse. It will collapse, either through coronavirus or something else. And then they'll rebuild again. It's not, then people, they may get some really, what is the use of all this civilization? It's all, and then they may have some philosophical thoughts. But it'll be smashan vairagya. When you go to the burning ghat and you see the body burning and you think, oh, that'll happen to me too. Then what is the meaning of my life, all my endeavors? And then I've seen so many times, as a young boy, I used to go to the funerals. I often used to go to funerals. It was good for me, because they'd give me 50p, which was quite a lot of money. That was the standard fee for an altar boy to assist. And then afterwards, after it was all over, the relatives of the deceased person, they'd get together and have tea and booze and all that. No, I don't think they had booze at the funerals. They had the weddings for sure, but at least tea. And then for a few minutes they'd be keeping up the solemnity. Then they'd be, I didn't see you for a long time, and how are you doing? All this kind of thing. In some cultures you can hire mourners. And here in Tamil Nadu, you play the music, right, of someone crying. In China and in different countries, you can hire people to cry for you. It's too boring to cry. You can pay someone else to cry for you. Professional mourners. So like that, the civilization will collapse, it'll be horrible, there'll be bloodshed, there'll be over. What usually happens with these sophisticated civilizations is that they build up, they become very powerful, and then they sink into sense gratification, and then they become weak, and they don't care, and they're all drunkards, and having sex left, right, and center, front, back, sideways, whatever. And then they become very weak in their moral fiber, and they have no spirit to fight, and then they get overrun by savages who then build up, and then they have all the facility, and then they become civilized, and then some after 100 years, 200 years, 300 years, 500 years, someone comes and overruns them. That's why in traditional societies, the nobility especially take care to educate, the fathers take care to educate their sons. Not in academic things so much, but in character, spirit. They have to be ready to be bold and fight and have good character. And the good character means just like among the British. We have very high civilization and we believe in fair dealings, but that's only among the British. They don't deal with the people they conquer like that. See, and they have a whole mindset that, see, these people, they're inferior and we're superior. So they're just like animals. They can't understand all these things. So it's better for them. We're doing them good by suppressing them and stealing everything they have. And after all, we're entitled. And there's still, it's going on, American exceptionalism. Have you heard of American exceptionalism? There's an idea that we're an exceptional people, and therefore we're entitled to loot other people's oil and so on and so on and so on. God bless America, of course. Why would he want to bless anywhere else? So like this, the story of civilization. One after another, they build up. They educate the sons to sacrifice to God. They go, you send your son out to Africa so he can oversee, keep those natives under control, and be prepared to die for the country, like this. Because they know that as soon as, if they don't educate their sons in this, what they call high character, which means to be a demon, basically, but a demon with solidarity with other demons, then as soon as they become dissolute and they just start drinking and drinking is there, but if you become an alcoholic and you just start having sex everywhere, left, right, then the whole civilization is finished. So they know the civilization rests on character. But their understanding of what high character is something different. And they know that the sexual drive has to be controlled. Even these demons who are exploiting, they know that it has to be controlled. We can see the demons in the Bhagavatam, the description. Just like Hiranyakashipu, he had his wives, he didn't divorce them. He wasn't a homosexual. At least there's no report of that. And they followed the Vedic principles, but for their own, to some extent, for their own materialistic reasons. They understood that there has to be some discipline. Without discipline, everything is gone. Just last night I heard how they're my disciples now, but when they were, their older husband and wife, when they were young, because the man himself was from a Vaishnav background, then when his wife, who was a young woman at the time, or young girl probably, because they used to, she went to a Shiva temple. So what did he do? He beat her. Just to make her understand she's not supposed to go to Shiva temples. You don't do that nowadays. You're not even supposed to think about doing it. If they see some brain waves in your brain that you're thinking about beating your wife, then you'll be hung, drawn, and quartered, or the modern equivalent of that. So the point is the idea of discipline. There has to be discipline. Without discipline, there's no civilization. And when there's civilization, when you build up, without discipline, there's no character training. Of course, discipline can be misused also. for exploitation. And that is a major complaint with the idea of keeping women under control, which Srila Prabhupada frequently refers to. But there's a lot of protest about that and distrust of that, because discipline and keeping others under control is generally considered to be intrinsically exploitive. It's not necessarily so, but it's considered to be. Now, civilization, you say, well, it's not just sex, it's not just big buildings, it's not just power, it's not just money, there's also art and philosophy and music and higher sentiments and poetry. But first of all you have to be stable and have sufficient income, and then you can think of all these things. Unless society is stable and fixed and there's some education, then philosophy and all these things, they cannot be developed. And even all the philosophy that they develop without understanding the basic teaching of Bhagavad Gita, yehi sangsparsha ja bhoga dukha yona evate adanta vanta konte anateshu ramate buddha, without understanding that sense gratification leads to suffering, then all philosophy and art, and it just leads back to sense gratification. Religion is a major ameliorating factor. Ameliorating, the translator's got stuck there. It lessens the impact of all this. Religion is... but with the age of the Enlightenment and the Renaissance in Europe, previously the art used to be mostly religious, but then it became opened up, and then the form, the human form, became a subject of painting, and especially the female form. And in the days before photography, the pornography was art. The painting, nude paintings of women, that was art. You see, it's art. We're appreciating it in an artistic way. But it's just, it's pornography, it's the same thing, it's the same idea. So the whole civilization, and you may say, well, we have very fine music, but still the whole society is based on sense gratification, unless there's a very clear understanding that sense gratification leads to suffering, and we should try to overcome that. Now, we do have within the Vedic civilization the Mimamsakas, who are sworn to sense gratification. They think that, yeah. What is that in the Bhagavad Gita? It speaks about the Mimamsakas. They're interested. Bhogaishvarya prasaktanam. What is that? The two verses go together. Pushpitang vachang pravidanti avipaschita Trigunna Vishaya Veda, yeah. Yamimang Pushpitang vachang pravidanti avipaschita Vadirata Vadirata Pata Nanyadastiti Vadinaha Kamatmana Swaga Para Janma Karma Phala Pradam Kriya Visheshu Bahulam. They perform extensive, very civilized ceremonies. But the aim is swarga. It's not om tad vishno paramam padam pashanti suryoho. They don't want to look that high. They say, what are we going to go all the way up there for? We're going to stop. Just a short bus ride away up to heaven. Swarga, Vaikunda's a lot further. We don't want to look all that way. We're going up to heaven. We don't even believe in all that stuff. Then... Kriyavisheshu bahalam bhogaishvaryam gatim prati. Yeah, they think that bhogaishvarya gatim prati. Their aim is bhog and aishvarya. And then what happens? Bhogaishvarya prasaktanam Tayaparita Jesus. Oh, they can't think clearly. Well, we are thinking very clearly. We pronounce the mantras very clearly. Vivasayatmaka buddhi samadhana vidhiyate. Their mind, we say, well, the mind is very fixed, but not on samadhi. It's fixed on bhog and aishvarya. And then as a result of getting, their mind may be very fixed to get that, but when they get it, then they simply engage in sense gratification. And they lose all that, and but that's their aim. Now we're very fixed in performing Vedic rituals, but we've got to have and enjoy ourselves like anything, and then we'll come back, yeah, we come back again, and then we go up again. Evang trai dharma anuprapana gata gatam kama kama labhante. And they say, yeah, we agree with that, yeah. We go up, we come down, we go up, we come down, and yeah, great, that's what we're into. But they don't see the point. It's all miserable. It's like building up the civilization. You get smashed, and then I get smashed, and we'll build it up again. We go to heaven, we'll come back. Yeah, we'll go up again. So, whoever's in that civilization, they think it's the most advanced civilization. Well, the most advanced civilization ever in the history of the world is America today. That's what they said in Rome. That's what they said in Babylon. That's what they said in Egypt. They always say, ours is the most advanced ever. They all think that. Why in America? The reasoning was given, I saw some years ago. Because it gives the most, this is the most advanced civilization ever, because he didn't cite the technology, which is undoubtedly within the history that is known to man at the present time, because the present civilization has stifled all knowledge of civilization prior to the Greeks in about 3,000 years ago. So it's undoubtedly the most technologically advanced. Shilpa Vidya, that Shilpa Vidya, Shilpi, what is that? Shilpi means a Shudra. They do some Shilpa, there's architecture and buildings and but apart from that, because it gives the most opportunity to the most number of people to enjoy themselves, to be happy by enjoying themselves. A foolishness. And even to do that, they have to exploit everyone else on the planet, pretty much. America, we're such an advanced civilization, means they've exploited not only the humans, but even the animals and the flora and fauna all over the world, so they can live very happily with their democracy and liberty, which anyway is being eroded day by day. So it will be smashed. It won't go on, for sure. We might have thought that, well, America, it can go on and on and on, because America has the best ever defense system in the world, of any civilization in the last 3,000 years. The two main parts of that defense system are, what are they? The Pacific Ocean and the Atlantic Ocean. Britain had the English Channel, which was pretty good. They never got invaded since 1066 until Tony Blair allowed mass immigration. But that's a really, and you got the Canadians up there, and then you got the South Americans there, and you got this tiny little, what's that called? Isthmus, tiny little landmass in Panama, and you keep it all under control. Keep those Latinos down there under control. And if they don't do what we say, then we'll have a coup in their government. In this way, they're pretty safe. So you might think America will go on forever, but it won't. It won't. It must degrade. The time factor won't allow any civilization to continue, especially in Kali Yuga. And That's going on. We can see that. The Vedic culture has continued for and will continue because it's based on solid principles. It's still there, struggling, almost dead, gasping for life. But it's still there because it's based on, it's connected with the Absolute Truth. And it's based on the, ultimately it's based on, although most of the members of Vedic culture are interested in dharma, artha, and karma. And some of them are interested in moksha, which is the higher principle. And ultimately it is aimed at Krishna prema. So it has very strong principles, and it can continue to survive. That which it shouldn't be thought that that will be that will go on forever, just automatically. And time to time, Bhagavan comes and resets it. Dharma sangsthapanarthaya sambhavami yuge yuge. Sometimes it becomes necessary just to clean up the whole thing and reset the civilization. So real civilization doesn't mean to have big buildings, and it may have big buildings, but in and of itself it's not a sign of civilization to have big buildings. The ants, they also build big buildings. They're huge, aren't they? If you see the size of an ant and see that they can build even up to this high, even up to the ceiling, so high. In relation to the ant's body size, that's higher than the World Trade Towers, which got destroyed by someone. Not exactly sure who. But it's much higher, isn't it? It must be 1,000 stories or more high. The ants can build. So big buildings in and of itself are not a sign of civilization. We may think that having all these things, sports stadiums and art and all these things, but real civilization begins with knowing the aim of life. Otherwise civilizations build, they collapse, they rebuild, they collapse. Even if this whole civilization collapses due to the coronavirus, it'll come up again. Don't worry, those of you who are materialistic, don't worry, it'll come up again. If you want to be a materialist, you will get born again, maybe as a rat in that big building. It'll come up again. It goes on and on and on like this. People are missing the point. They're missing the point. Nati vidu swartagatin hi Vishnu. In one, they don't know that the real aim of life is Vishnu. The demigods and the demons, Vishnu is holding the Amrita, and they're interested in the Amrita, not in Vishnu. They were interested in her because she's very good looking and this and that. But they wanted to get the Amrita so that they could go on enjoying beautiful women like her. Why just her? There are so many. You think that Aishwarya Rai was beautiful, she'd just be some normal plain Jane up on the heavenly planet. So maybe not even that. It's unimaginable to us how beautiful they are in the heavenly planets. And then they're even more beautiful in the spiritual world. So they missed the point. The demigods and the demons, they missed the point that the real nectar is Krishna. And they're, even though the demigods, they knew, they in one sense they're more bewildered than the demons, because the demons by their very nature, they're not inclined to Vishnu, but the demigods, they know that Vishnu is supreme, but they're still not intrinsically very interested in him. Anyone who wants sense gratification, even in a pious way, is a fool. The Bhagavad Gita, in the beginning, Krishna, he says these people are foolish. Vedavadarataha, those who are after the goals, they take the words of the Vedas without knowing the real meaning of the real import of the Vedas. So he said they're foolish. So what to speak of people who are not even following the Vedas and they're just after sense gratification? Anyone who wants material happiness, even piously, what to speak of impiously? They're foolish. This we learn from Srimad Bhagavatam. So this idea, even piously we'll enjoy this world, and then we'll do our studies, we'll get a good job, it's my devotional service to have a good job. Where's your good job now? What are you going to do with your good job now? You have a credit card. And what are you going to eat that? You have a credit card? Huh? There's no food in the fridge. What are you going to do? I have a credit. You see, in my account, I have so many lakhs of rupees. What are you going to do with that? So this idea that, yes, I'll chant Hare Krishna and pursue my material aims, I want to have a great career, it's all nonsense, this great career idea. And we can see how shallow this whole idea of a great career is when I was just looking at the Bhaktivedanta Gurukul website where someone says, yeah, I went to Bhaktivedanta Gurukul and now I'm a pilot in America, some Indian boy saying, I fulfilled my dream. Yeah, time to wake up. Pilots don't have jobs anymore. So this phantasmagoria of chasing the, have a great career. I remember to chant Hare Krishna also. Yeah, okay, but the main thing is to have a great career. So. All rubbish ideas. So now we can see, maybe we can see now how Prabhupada, he was always emphasizing this. Go to the land, simple living, high thinking, this is real civilization. Simple living and high thinking. Often, even within our movement, if devotees are interested in farms, they want to present it. You see, we're living simply, we're growing all our food, it's eco-friendly and this and that. But what about the high thinking part? We're not just farmers living a nice life very simply, and we're very happy living peacefully. The high thinking, that's the main thing. The simple living is to facilitate the high thinking. It's not that we're... Yes, the Hare Krishna movement is very interested in promoting eco-friendly way of life. We're not interested in promoting eco-friendly way of life. We're interested in promoting Krishna consciousness, which automatically gives way to an eco-friendly way of life. So actually our farms, they're supposed to be the best preaching should be at our farms. And people come and tell them, yeah, our civilization is, what we're doing here, our life is not based on sex. And they say, well, my life is not based on sex. Yeah, your whole civilization is based on sex. You can tell them. Your whole civilization is simply squeezing the last drop of blood out of you. Here, we're all working cooperatively to serve Krishna. Vairagya Vidya. Live simply, cultivate knowledge of Krishna. Chant Hare Krishna. And all of a sudden there'll be a scramble to the land and the devotees that, I think it's time to retire now. You know, I'm really getting impressed by Prabhupada's sayings about the simple, let's go! They won't even allow you to go now. Everyone, in the country, in all the countries, they're making everyone a prisoner in their house. In the village, people will go about their work as usual. Yeah, it may be too late. The demons, they can't imagine any other kind of civilization until it collapses. This is civilization. They think it'll go on forever. and little, I mean, I'm going like this, but it's so small you can't see it. And their whole big civilization, all of a sudden, it all collapses. It's puncturing their pride, like the frog. Breathe in, blows up, I'm such a big frog, puff, finished. So they can't imagine any other kind of civilization, but we're supposed to show that real civilization means not to exacerbate the material disease of wanting to enjoy this material world, but to minimize our bodily needs. Civilization doesn't mean to have huge buildings with 100 stories, very wardrobes full of so many clothes and 50 pairs of shoes and smartphones and iPads and iPods. Civilization means to clear all the clutter out of our lives and concentrate on what we need to do. Materially, we need food, clothing, shelter, company, sex. Yes, it's also required, at least for having more children, to continue, to give living beings who are qualified for this to take birth. Grihasthas also have a duty to give birth to children so that they can come into this world and come up. Civilization, Prabhupada said, means to push people toward perfection, to give them that kind of training where they'll be free from sexual desire, or they can, they don't become victims to that sexual desire. And they can produce more children, or they may not marry. But the minimal, whatever we need, we use. So we can simply eat and live comfortably. Comfortably means you don't need a very comfortable bed. When you're asleep, it's the same thing, whether you're sleeping on the floor or sleeping on some fancy bed. So minimize what we need and concentrate on the real goal of life, which is to be free from birth and death and go to Krishna. Hare Krishna. All glories to His divine grace, Srila Prabhupada. Hare Krishna.